Welcome back, everybody. We are diving deep today into the life of Abraham.
One of the most fascinating figures in the Bible.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And we are going to get into some really interesting stuff as we go through the book of Genesis.
Definitely looking forward to that.
Genesis is a wild ride, folks.
It is.
And we are going to be using Dr. Kenneth Matthews' lecture series on Genesis.
Specifically, Session 15, The Promised Son and the Test of Faith.
That's right. And we're covering chapters 20 through 25 in this deep dive. So buckle up.
We're going to cover a lot of ground.
We are. Okay. So one of the first things that kind of jumps out at me right off the bat is how human Abraham is.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
This is the father of faith. And what does he do? He lies about his wife, Sarah.
Not once, but twice.
I know. First to Pharaoh and now to King Abimelech.
You'd think he would have learned his lesson the first time around.
Right. I mean, it's almost comical, but also like, what's going on here?
Well, it really, I think, highlights the tension between faith.
Oh, yeah.
And human weakness, mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
Because here's this guy
yeah.
who has received these incredible promises from God.
Countless descendants, a nation of his own.
Exactly. And he still struggles with fear and insecurity.
So it's not just that he messed up, right? Dr. Matthews actually points out that this repeated deception, it kind of foreshadows a similar situation with his son Isaac later on.
That's right.
It's like this family pattern
yes.
that's playing out.
Generational sin, perhaps.
Yeah. And I think that's where the real insight lies. It's not just about one man's failings.
It's about human nature.
Yeah. We all mess up.
We carry our baggage, our fears, our tendencies to make the same mistakes.
Over and over again. It's kind of comforting in a weird way.
I think so.
To know that even Abraham had his moments.
And yet God still chose him.
Right.
God doesn't give up on us, even when we make a mess of things.
It's encouraging.
Very encouraging.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so let's move on to something a little more joyful.
Sounds good.
The birth of Isaac. Finally.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
After 25 years of waiting.
25 years? I can't even imagine. Sarah, who was, you know, believed to be barren, gives birth to this promised son. It's like, talk about a testament to God's faithfulness.
Absolutely. And what I find fascinating is how the narrative kind of emphasizes the impossible nature of this event.
Oh, yeah.
You have Sarah's barrenness.
Yeah.
Juxtaposed with the fertility of Abimelech's household.
Right.
It's like God is saying, look, I can do anything.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a visual reminder that God operates outside the bounds of human logic.
Absolutely.
And expectations. Okay. And can we just talk about the name Isaac for a second?
Please.
It means he laughs, right?
Yes.
And it reflects the joy and the disbelief surrounding his birth.
And relief.
Yes. It's such a powerful image. This idea that God can bring laughter and hope into a situation that seemed utterly hopeless.
Like a beautiful picture of redemption.
It is. But, you know, as we know, things don't always stay joyful for long in the Bible.
That's true.
We got to have the conflict. Rivalry erupts between Isaac and his half-brother Ishmael.
Abraham's son with Hagar.
Right. Okay, so this is where things get a little messy.
Yes, the family dynamics become mm-hmm. quite complicated.
You can't help but feel for everyone involved.
Oh, absolutely.
Hagar and Ishmael sent away into the wilderness. And Abraham forced to make this impossible choice. It's heartbreaking.
And Dr. Matthews suggests that this event foreshadows larger tensions that will play out between Isaac's descendants and Ishmael's descendants for generations to come.
Oh, wow.
It's a reminder that our choices can have far-reaching consequences.
For sure. Okay, so let's shift gears a little bit and look at a moment of peace and reconciliation in this story.
Sounds good.
The treaty at Beersheba.
Between Abraham and Abimelech.
Yes. Now, this isn't just any random peace treaty.
No, it happens at a very symbolic location.
Tell me more. Why is Beersheba so important?
Well, it was an oasis on the edge of the wilderness.
Okay.
A place of provision, refuge.
I see.
And it's here that Abraham invokes the name of God as El Olam.
El Olam. Okay. What's the significance of that?
The eternal God.
Oh, interesting.
Dr. Matthews explains that this name emphasizes the enduring nature of God's promises.
Okay.
He is constant, unchanging.
And his word is forever settled.
Right.
So even in the midst of all this chaos and uncertainty,
yeah.
Abraham is clinging to the truth that God is eternal.
Yes.
And his promises are unshakable.
Exactly. And I think that's a powerful reminder for us today.
Absolutely.
No matter what storms we face in life,
yeah,
we can anchor ourselves in that knowledge.
That God is always with us.
His love is everlasting.
His purposes will prevail.
Amen to that.
Seriously.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that brings us to, I guess, You could say the ultimate test of Abraham's faith.
Mm-hmm.
God commands him to sacrifice his son, Isaac.
Yeah, we're about to enter some intense territory.
I know. This is heavy stuff, folks. We're going to unpack this together after the break.
I can't wait.
All right, so we're talking about this command from God to sacrifice Isaac.
Yeah, the son he waited decades for.
The son that carries the promise, the whole legacy.
And it just boggles the mind.
How do you even process that?
Yeah, Dr. Matthews really emphasizes just the emotional weight of this whole journey for Abraham.
Yeah, 3 days.
To Mount Moriah.
3 days, knowing what he's supposed to do.
Knowing what's at stake.
Imagine just the inner turmoil.
Yeah. And then there's that line when they reach the mountain.
When he says to the servants, stay here. The boy and I will go over there and worship, and we will come back to you.
Oh, man. That line just gives me chills every time I read it.
It raises so many questions, right?
It does.
Like, did he actually believe they would both return?
Was it just a desperate hope?
Or was it like this profound expression of his faith?
Even in the face of the unthinkable, you know?
I think what strikes me is that even in this moment of testing, like ultimate testing, Abraham still chooses to worship.
Right.
It's like he's clinging to the belief that God is still good.
Still worthy of praise.
Yeah. Even when it doesn't make sense.
And I think that's really what faith is all about. It's not about blind obedience, you know, or just ignoring our doubts.
It's about holding on to that relationship with God.
Even when you're wrestling with these tough questions and choices.
Okay, so Abraham builds the altar.
Yeah.
He binds Isaac.
It's about to strike.
And then at the last second,
the angel of the Lord calls out.
Talk about a dramatic moment.
It really drives home the point that God doesn't desire child sacrifice.
Right. This isn't about that.
It's about showing us the lengths to which Abraham was willing to go to obey God.
Okay. So, but why? Why put him through this? Why would God even do that?
That's the question, isn't it?
It's a big one.
Maybe it was to demonstrate the depth of Abraham's faith.
To himself, to the world.
To everyone, you know? And maybe it was also to reveal something about God's character.
Okay, yeah.
That he is merciful and he provides.
Well, he does provide a ram, right?
Yes. Caught in the thicket.
As a substitute for Isaac.
A powerful visual reminder that God provides, even when we can't see a way out.
So it's not just a test. It's a lesson, too.
It's a testament to God's faithfulness.
Yeah, and it makes me think about the ultimate sacrifice of Jesus, too.
Yes. Taking our place on the cross.
Offering himself as the final atonement.
It adds a whole new layer to this story, doesn't it?
For sure. But, you know, this isn't just some theological idea. Mm-hmm. This experience changes Abraham.
Absolutely.
It shapes his understanding of God.
And it's after this that he buys the cave of Machpelah.
In Hebron.
As a burial site for his family.
And why is that significant?
Well, remember, God promised Abraham land for his descendants.
Right, right.
This purchase, even though it's just a cave,
it's
a tangible expression of his faith.
That God will keep his promises.
Even if it's generations down the line.
Planting a flag.
Planting the promise, yeah.
Wow. And then there's that whole thing with finding a wife for Isaac.
Oh, yeah.
Insisting that she be from his own family.
Not a Canaanite.
Which, you know, he sends his servant all the way back to Mesopotamia to find the right woman. I mean, talk about commitment.
It really underscores the importance of that lineage for Abraham.
For God's plan, yeah.
So even after this trial.
This horrific trial.
Yeah, his faith comes out stronger.
He keeps trusting God.
But life throws more curveballs, right?
It always does. And the next part of the story brings a mix of sorrow and reconciliation.
As we approach the end of Abraham's life.
A long and eventful life.
So we've been through a lot with Abraham, haven't we?
We have. Promises and deceptions, births and conflicts, that intense test of faith.
And now we arrive at the final chapter. So where does this story leave us?
Well, as we approach the end of Abraham's life, the narrative kind of takes on a quieter tone.
Yeah.
More reflective, you know? Hmm. Like we're invited to think about the legacy he leaves behind.
Yeah. And, you know, one thing that really stands out to me is even though there was all that tension between Isaac and Ishmael.
Right.
They both come together to bury their father.
Yeah.
It's a powerful image of unity.
Right.
Reconciliation. Despite the conflicts, the separation.
Yeah.
They recognize that shared heritage, you know,
yeah.
and honor their father together.
It's a good reminder for all of us.
It is.
Especially in families where there's been hurt, estrangement. There's always hope for reconciliation.
Even if it's just acknowledging that shared history.
Right. But speaking of legacy, the narrative also mentions Ishmael's descendants.
Right.
Fulfilling God's promise to make him a great nation, too.
That's an important detail.
It is.
Because it shows us that God's faithfulness extends beyond that direct covenant line.
Yeah.
Isaac is the heir to the main promises, of course.
Yeah.
But God's blessings flow out to others, too.
It's like this ripple effect.
Exactly. The expansive nature of God's grace, you know?
Okay, so as we wrap up this deep dive into Abraham's life, what are the big takeaways? What sticks with you?
I think for me, it's this powerful reminder that faith is a journey.
Not a destination.
Not a one-time event,
yeah,
right?
Really.
It's a process of wrestling, trusting, surrendering. And, you know, Abraham's life was full of twists and turns.
Yeah, ups and downs.
Moments of doubt.
Questioning.
But he kept coming back to God.
And God was faithful.
Always.
Yeah, it's easy to read these stories and think, wow, Abraham had such strong faith. But what I find encouraging is that it was tested.
Refined through struggles.
He messed up. He questioned. He doubted. But he kept going.
And I think that's the key takeaway for us today.
Yeah.
We don't have to be perfect to have faith.
Mm-hmm.
It's about taking that next step.
Even when it's hard.
Even when it doesn't make sense.
Trusting that God is working it all out.
He's got it.
It makes you wonder, doesn't it, what impossible things is God calling us to?
Right.
What promises has he placed in our hearts that maybe seem too big, too far off?
Maybe this deep dive into Abraham's life is an invitation.
To dust off those old dreams.
Rekindle that flicker of faith, yeah.
Step out in courage.
Trusting that God will be with us every step of the way.
What a powerful thought. Well, that's our deep dive into the life of Abraham.
We hope you found it insightful.
Challenging.
Inspiring.
Thanks for joining us on this journey. Until next time, keep exploring, keep learning, and keep seeking truth.
We'll see you next time.